Bulldog Nation, this is the 100 Sanford Podcast, home of Georgia Bulldogs football and athletics talk on the Big 3 Roll-Up Network. I'm back. I am Lamar Lovelace.
Sugar Trey.
Graham Coffee.
Graham Coffee in the building. Everybody loves when Graham comes on, man. Everybody loves when you come on. But hey, fellas, the first show was in the books. We're now at the second show. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, we still bringing out heat, man. We're just early. Just giving a taste what the future supposed to be like.
I thought you guys did a really good job with the interview with Kendall. I'm sorry, with Chris Milton, Kendall Milton's dad. Really enjoyed that. And, it seemed like there was quite a few people that checked us out for the first episode and were excited to doing something a little bit different. So.
No, we got a lot of feedback, man. DeAndra. She's a UGA alum. I mean, she hit me up in the DMs and said, hey, man, that was an excellent show. I don't even listen to podcasts, but now I'm downloading you guys. Allison in Jacksonville, Florida. I think everybody knows her. The funny thing is, did you see how she gave Trey a shout-out? I think it was, she was quoting him.
Wait, just for the record, before we go further, Allison lives in Jacksonville, Georgia, not Jacksonville, Florida.
Are you sure?
No, I mean, Jacksonville, Florida is Jacksonville, Georgia, according to Kirby Smart in the locker room. The 2017 Georgia-Florida game.
All right, well, here was her hashtag that she gave. She said, hashtag, leave those shoulders in that chest in Georgia. That was one from Chris Milton. That was his comment. But then Trey's, this is when she blew you up. Hashtag, when we win a natty, Twitter will have to put me on banned. So
I'm still sticking to that. They're going to have to put me on ban. I'm going to have to get suspended again. They're going to have to delete my account. That's how I'm coming.
When it happens, man, I guarantee you, like, I think you're going to see about half of the Florida fan base just deactivate for a year. They're going to have to after all the shit they've talked this offseason. I mean,
you're going to see me post about 30 tweets less than a minute.
Man, I think that's good. I think Twitter might implode. I really believe that, especially in the Southeast. I think it's just going to go over the top.
Man, all the 1980 Joes going to be dead. I had a guy tell me 1980 today. I wanted to slap. I was kind of heated.
Well, no, like, you know, the 1980 thing, I think if you're a Georgia fan, you should look on it as a positive, because all these programs in the East and everybody in the West except for Bama and LSU, ever since Kirby showed up, he's got a winning record against them. And, you know, he's taken over recruiting in the division. He's made Georgia the top dog in the East, playing for the SEC title almost every year. And so that's all they have to say is 1980. They don't have to say, you know, like, oh, you know, we beat you three in a row or anything like that. It's just like 1980. In reality, all that's indicative of is Georgia's a healthier program than they are at this very moment.
Yeah, but they haven't won a national championship either, though, in a long time. Since, like, when?
Was it 2000? Are you talking about Florida?
Yeah.
Was it 08, 06, 08?
08?
Yeah.
Yeah, 08, which honestly is just as irrelevant to high school recruits now as the championship in 1980 was. None of them remember it. They were all, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old.
That's when you had that meme. That's when you had that little hashtag speed kills. Oh, my God.
Yeah, SEC speed. That's when that narrative. Yeah, when they blew out Ohio State, which was 06, I think, when they beat Ohio State.
Man,
but, those were some great teams, man. I'm not taking anything away from them. I was in Jacksonville in 2008 and watched Tebow break Herschel's touchdown record, and those dudes ran it up all over Georgia.
I used to hate Percy Harvey and Chris Rainey. I used to throw my remote at the TV every time I see them break all fit run. I'm like,
well, you know what? I mean, we did have a lot of people from Florida DMing us and talking about, you know, oh, man, it's a good show, but 1980. I mean, so look, we're giving y'all a shout-out right now. We're telling y'all had a good team in 06, a good team in 08, but it's a new era. It's a new time. It's Kirby Smart
time. Speaking of that,
the
next person that tells me 1980 on my Twitter, you catching the first fade.
Fade on sight, huh?
Fade on sight. That's going to be the next hashtag. There you go, Allison. Fade on sight. There you go. Hey, man, but let's get into something. Let's get into that news. We got news going on in Athens, and good and bad, I guess. I don't know. What do you guys got? We got D-Rob leaving and going to Auburn. What's your thoughts on that?
Truly, I think it's good. I think it's good for him. It, like, a lot of fans get mad at a player transfer, but at the end of the day, sometimes it don't work out. It's business. Either at the end of the day, it's business. He a senior. He got to get his reps. Got to get his targets. At Georgia, we all know he wasn't going to get targeted like that because our receiver on his feet. You got Blaylock coming back. You got Roseman coming back. And then you got the up-and-coming freshman, Mitchell. So it was the best business decision for him to leave and go to Auburn, which he can probably go to Auburn and be wide receiver one.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, I mean, I will pull for D-Rob, you know, in every game except for when Georgia plays him.
Right.
I hope he has a healthy year.
You got to catch the no-fly
zone. Yeah, but I would love to see him have, you know, a big year and be a draft pick next season. By all accounts, like, he was a guy that was always kind to everybody in Athens.
Thanks.
And always heard stories about him, you know, taking pictures with kids and signing autographs and just being a really gracious human being. So you gotta wish nothing but the best for him. But I think it speaks probably pretty well to the development that's happening in Georgia's wide receiver room, because if you kind of look at where he was in the pecking order in terms of class, you know, you would think he probably – this was his time to be that third, fourth option. And with Mitchell and some of these guys you already named, but like Justin Robinson, for example – has probably come on a little bit and was probably threatening for some of those reps. And so it's a shame because, like, I thought JT Daniels kind of, you know, made him part of the offense more than we've seen it.
Yeah,
because
didn't he have a big play in the spring game? Like, he had a big play.
Yeah. And he had some good catches against Cincy and Mississippi State. And, like, you know, with Monken not installing all of the offense last year, I think – the screen game on the outside of the wide receivers is something that you'll probably see more of from Georgia this season. And him and Burton would be kind of the top two candidates for that. So I think his speed will be missed, but you also have Arian Smith in the lineup to burn folks downfield. So I don't think it's a huge loss for Georgia, but I wish that, you know, we weren't losing him at the same time, but I still think it's best for him to be somewhere else where he's going to get more burn.
Yeah, I agree, fellas. I mean, I think he was one of those guys I thought was really going to be a leader in the locker room, especially when it comes down towards the season, when you need those veterans, those guys that can help stabilize a locker room. But at the same time, it's like you guys have already mentioned, we got so much talent on that side of the field. I mean, it's just filled up. And then you bring in Arik Gilbert, and you got the same. You got another playmaker coming in. So, but hey, you know, good things to him over there at Auburn, you know, except against us. But what else? What other news we got?
You got Alexander committing to Bama. Another five-star going there.
Bama continues to reload?
Basically.
Shock. Shocker.
It's just normal now.
Right.
You wouldn't even be surprised. Like, it's just normal.
And I don't know why it shouldn't, you know, it should be a surprise to people. They're going to continue to get who they get. It's going to continue to be an arms race between us
right.
and Bama, I think, you know, the West against the East in terms of being able to recruit at a high level. But it is what it is, and that's what you got to do. You got to be able to take down the giant. You got to be able to take down the elephant in the room. They are the elephant in the room. We talked about that last week. You just got to continue to keep chopping wood. You know, that's the name of the game. You got to take down the giant. What else, man? Let's talk about some recruiting. I know we got some recruits that are getting ready to commit sooner than later.
Yeah, you got Branson Robinson.
Got two on the same day, actually.
Who's coming in on the same day?
You got Bryson, and you got BDS. And then you got, I guess, like a couple of weeks from now, you got Carlton Manning Jr.
Okay.
Yeah, Daniel Sutton, five-star edge rush prospect, and then Branson Robinson, running back out of Mississippi, top 50 overall player, had a huge junior season last year. You know, Branson, I feel like Georgia's kind of been the leader all along. He's been vocal that Georgia was the leader. If he doesn't commit to Georgia, I think it would be a pretty big surprise.
Shocker.
Yeah. And, I mean, and it seems like, you know, I know that some outlets have, you know, crystal-balled Sutton to Georgia as well. So it could be two kind of five-star caliber prospects on the same day there on July 22nd when those guys commit. You know, which I think, you know, those two guys would knock Georgia back up in the top three or so. On
right, getting Bryson alone, just like the guy's like, he's like 5'10", 220. Like,
he's a monster, man.
He's already college size already.
Yes.
Baby Chubb.
College right. size, explosive, strong, physical. I mean, he's definitely built for the SEC. And then when you got DDS, it cracks me up, man, because, I mean, look, we might as well just call him Dentist because he's going to be knocking teeth out no matter where he goes. So,
look, he got a mean streak to him. Like,
yes, he does, man.
I seen one of his little highlights, bro. He drove the guy back like literally 5 yards, and just like, I'm like, yeah, just I'm sold. Get him on my team. I need him.
Yeah, he's that kind of guy that can lead the position room, and actually take it to new heights. Because I think you need that dog on the defensive line. You need that guy that's willing to carry that position room on its back, and he's got that mean streak, like you said, man. There's a lot of film you can go back and look at. He gets off on the ball extremely quick, extremely strong. I mean, he's got a frame that can still add pounds to it, and when I look at him, I think of Myles Garrett in the NFL, like his body size, his explosion, you know, the way he's built, and that's saying a lot.
Saying a whole lot, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think Georgia's kind of about to, I think, go on a run of having – first, second round pass rushers every single year. You know, I think that will start with Adam Anderson this season.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a 10 sack plus kind of guy in 2021. And I think Nolan Smith is rounding into form. And there's, you know, you got Sorry and you got a lot of these guys that are kind of in the system waiting on their turn. And he should be, you know, Sutton should be kind of the next in line for being that, you know, featured pass rusher that, like Aziz was last year, you know, that guy that puts his hand on the dirt and third down, and you just know 9 times out of 10, nobody's going to stop him.
Right. And then with another thing about Bryson, what really made me, like, seeing, because I think he was a good back, he actually has good footwork and can catch out the backfield. Like, you've seen him going up in some of them drills, like, he did one move, like, put a spin move on the guy, just got free, just was crazy.
Well, and that's a good thing, because coming into this Munkin offense, it's not just about running in between the tackles. You're going to have to be able to pass block. You're going to have to be able to catch the ball in the backfield. And the more diverse you are, the more time you're going to get on the field, quite honestly. That's the way college football is now evolving. If you're a running back that all you're doing is taking 25 to 30 carries a game, that day is over. Now it's about being flexible. It's about being diverse. It's multiple guys in the that are getting their opportunity. You better be flexible, and you better be willing to do that, or else you're not going to see the field, whether it's Georgia or anybody else. So I agree with you on that with Branson.
Well, and it's about touches, right? You know, and it's like these backs these days, they might have 18 carries but also get 8-9 targets and 6-7 receptions in the passing game. And, like, I think that was one thing that – the X-Man you brought up last week that I was excited about from the spring game was, I think Georgia's backs had something like 18 receptions or something in the spring game. And so it's like getting those athletes the ball underneath and in space will be huge, because, I mean, Georgia's got guys that can do a lot after the catch in the backfield. And so I think it'll only serve to help in recruiting if we can get those guys more involved in the receiving game. So, be interesting to see. But, yeah, I mean, Branson, really good pass catcher for a high school kid. But I think that pass block thing that you brought up a second ago, Lamar, like, to me, that's the biggest hurdle for these young guys in terms of getting on the field. If you can come in and pass block, you're going to get reps.
Well, you better, or JT's going to have you sitting on the bench. I mean, it's just the way, you know, that's what happens. You don't protect the quarterback. Yeah, somebody's going to be sitting on the bench. But so, hey, what about White from Philadelphia? What are your thoughts on that? We have a connection, you know, with Philadelphia and our ability to be able to pull guys down south from Philly. I mean, what's your thoughts on White?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a five-star talent, one of the top edge rushers in the country. Down to 8 schools, right, which it's all the usual suspects are in there: Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, you know, Florida, A&M, Oregon, Miami. But it seems like Georgia's in a good spot in this race. Like, I definitely am not well-informed enough, or don't think there's enough information out there quite yet to call it, like, he's coming to UGA. But I'd be interested to hear what what my man Trey has to say about it, because I know he's got his ear to the ground.
I feel like I say like I say like 60%, because you got to look at it. You got one of his friends. I say like out of us and Ohio State, that's the chances.
Okay.
Yeah, Ohio State really does recruit Pennsylvania very well for one, but Philadelphia definitely. If I'm correct, he might be from the same school with Harrison, that Harrison was at last year. If I'm correct, don't quote me on that, but Marvin Harrison's kid that actually Ohio State. So that would be a big pull. But you know what we do? We recruit Philadelphia very well. We got a good connection with Philadelphia. Guys come down to Georgia and prosper. And it's not one of those schools where you come down and all of a sudden you get lost in the shuffle because, you know, you go from the Northeast to the South. No, you actually come, you play, you get some good time in, and you actually get a chance for the league. But two other guys we want to talk about. Bear Alexander, he's still on the list, obviously. I mean, he was a former commit, now decommit. There we get into that. And then we got Jalen Gibson, the offer that we gave to the 6'5 wide receiver, which could be huge. What are your thoughts on those guys?
Tell us about Gibson, Trey.
He's one of them guys that, you know, like, that's rising because he's doing well in camp, but he is one of them guys that's gonna be great. Like, he's 6'5", he got good speed. He's a good pass catcher, and he's got a good catch rate. So he's one of them guys that's gonna like, really rise in the rankings, which we just offered him. Then we already – when he put out his top seven, we already in his top seven. So I think we're in a good position there to try to make something happen.
I know that the Florida fans out there, you know, felt really strongly that he's kind of one of those guys that's theirs to lose. Would you agree with that assessment, that he's probably a Gator lean right now?
Right now, I say yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think – obviously, like you're saying, really raw guy, but a lot of talent there, and could probably develop into something special, especially at 6'5", just that downfield 50-50 ball.
Right, then you got to look at it. It's early. It's July. We got a long time before signing it. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, yeah, you're right about that. Anything can definitely happen by then.
So let's talk about Bear, because I know we've all seen the video of him out on the boat with Gunnar Stockton. And
yeah.
There's, you know, been a lot of word around that he's looking to transfer somewhere in Georgia for his senior year. But, you know, he remains a Texas A&M commit. What do you guys think about this kid? It seems like he's had a really kind of interesting recruitment, to put it lightly.
Very interesting.
See, I think the kid really wants to go to Georgia. I really do. I just believe that when Nick Williams actually left Georgia to go to Texas A&M, I mean, you kind of go where you feel comfortable, where there's a guy that you know is going to take care of you, a big brother. I mean, and he lives in Texas now, and it's kind of tough. It's really tough, fellas, to pull Texas kids from Texas. But once that bug gets in you that you want to leave home, it's also hard to get that bug back out of you, you know what I mean? So
right. The
ability for him to actually take a year or a season to play in Georgia, I don't know what the real reason would be. I mean, both of them are hotbeds for football, so why would he leave and go to Georgia to play football if he wasn't actually maybe possibly leaning to go back to and possibly recommit to Georgia or some, you know, somewhere else in the Southeast Conference? But I didn't even know that video was new. I thought it might have been old. Was it new?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It was old.
No, I think this was fairly recent, was it not?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's the whole thing with videos. You have no idea.
That's true.
Who's doing what, and hopefully it was relatively new. Because if it was, I mean, then I think that we still have a shot. That's one of those reasons why I never say never, and I never kind of get down or troll a commit for
because you never know. It was new.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys that could really be a strong influence on that defensive line. I mean, if you can imagine bringing in a DDS, bringing in a Bear Alexander, I mean, you're set for the next 3 years behind some stout guys that we already have in Davis, who's going to be doing a hell of a job this year. You know, you're set. Your commitment is set in terms of for this class. But I'm high on the kid. I mean, I think he's a monster. I love his personality. I love what he can bring to the locker room. So, I mean,
we got to have somebody in that 99, man.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, this has the possibility to be a generational-type class on the interior line. When you talk about a talent like Alexander that Georgia's still very much in it for, and like you just said, it's a long time till signing day. And then, you know, with Travis Shaw, there's a lot of potential there between Georgia, UNC. Where's he going to go? His best friend's already coming to UGA. And then, obviously, Walter Nolan, you know, is out there. And that's going to be an interesting one as well that I think kind of all of us probably believe that one's going to come down to the wire. And it could be one of those things, whoever gets the last visit is where he lands.
Yeah, I agree. We have any other news on recruiting before we get into some of the other crux of what we wanted to talk about today?
No, sir.
Well, I tell you what, man, I know a lot of people were talking about, why are you guys talking about this season? You had Florida people DMing us saying, man, you know, you want to talk about that Florida game from last year, and you had all this other kind of nonsense going on. But I thought it'd be interesting to actually get into the actual season itself. We talked about that first game. We talked about Clemson, which obviously is the big elephant in the room. Everybody believes that if Georgia wins that, it's not clear sailing, but, I mean, it's really putting us on the path for that title. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about the season in general. And in first, I'd love to talk about that big game, that September 4th, 6:30 p.m. We already know what it is. It's Clemson. Let's talk about it. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this game being played early? That's my first question.
Well, so if you go back and look at Georgia, you know, last three SEC championships Georgia's won, 2002, 2005, 2017. 2002, Georgia opens up with Clemson. 2005, they open up with a big, you know, primetime matchup against Boise State. That was like prime Boise. And then 2017, you got Notre Dame. Second game of the season after playing Appalachian State. And so if you look back, like, the Georgia teams that have had these big games early in the schedule historically have played really, really well. And I think that, you know, it brings a different edge and a different mentality to fall camp when you've got a marquee matchup like that to open up the season. So I think it bodes well for the preparation and kind of forming as a team and hopefully having some leaders step up in the locker room. I personally think, you know, it's interesting. We were all kind of talking about point spreads and Vegas lines a little bit in the direct messages the other day. And what I think is interesting is, like, you know, Clemson was a 3.5-point favorite in this game before Tyke Smith transferred in, before Arik Gilbert transferred in. And that hasn't changed at any point in time. And I mean, remember – the public sets the line, right? And so I think the public perception of this game is that, you know, Clemson should be a little bit better than Georgia. I don't know that that's the reality on the field. Yeah, well, and I mean, I think Uiagalelei, the quarterback, we all know he's extremely talented, former top recruit, but we've only seen him play one game, right? And playing what Notre Dame has on defense, especially on the defensive line and the linebacking core, is way different than playing what Georgia has. And so I think if Georgia can get a little pressure and speed up his clock a little bit, that it's going to throw everything off for them. I mean, everyone I think is predicting like a shootout type game right now, and it really wouldn't shock me if this game is like a 28-24 kind of defensive struggle a little bit, just because the defensive lines for both teams are so good.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you know, you kind of go back and you look at the history of what Georgia has done with those early games. They're prepared. And, you know, this is a Kirby Smart team that I think will be locked in. They have a full off season. We have a lot of talent coming back. We have a lot of senior talent coming back. I told you guys last week how I had talked to one of the coaches that were close to the program that said, hey, you know what, this team is just as talented as 2017. It's all leadership. And then we hear from Chris Milton last week that, hey, he has been told by, you know, his son, obviously, but everybody's locked in. It's, I mean, heck, we've been trying to get guys to come to the show, and they're like, hey, you know what, I want to kind of stay locked in right now because I'm getting ready for that first game of the season. And I'd rather a kid tell me that than say, hey, I got a lot of time on my hands. Heck, let's go talk and let's chop it up for an hour and a half. I mean,
100%.
So that gives you everything that you need to know. But let me ask you this. Do you think all the pressure is on Georgia, or do you think the pressure is on Clemson?
No, it's all on Clemson. I mean, if you look at that Clemson program, the last two marquee matchups they've lined up in, you know, Ohio State last year, they lost, and then LSU in the national championship game in 2019, they got blown off the field. And so the last two times they've stepped on the field with a marquee opponent, they've lost, and they, you know, they've been on a little bit of a losing streak against SEC teams lately.
And Georgia by 20.
I'll put it this way. I think there's a better chance of Georgia blowing out Clemson than I do Clemson blowing out Georgia.
I definitely believe that.
What do you guys?
They keep throwing for 300 yards and three touchdowns. Stop playing.
What do you guys? I mean, Clemson's secondary struggled a lot against Ohio State, which there's a ton of talent in that Ohio State receiving core last year, but Georgia has as good of a wide receiving room as anyone in the country right now, and I think that they can really stress that secondary for Clemson. The question, right, is how does the O-line hold up against the front seven for Clemson, because that's the strength of Clemson's team. My question for you, X-Man, would be like, you know, what do you think's going on with Justin Ross? Do you think we see him in that first game? There's been a lot of, like, interesting rumors going on this offseason.
He's going to play.
All right, well, there you go. You heard it here first, folks, from the man himself.
Now, you know what? I want to kind of get back to what you said, Graham, which is that defense. And there's been a lot of talk about Clemson bringing back, they said 11, no, 10, because we actually have one of their 11 on our side of the field now in Kendrick. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that defense bringing everyone back. But, fellas, they did not have a top-ranked defense last year. I mean, they struggled a lot against the pass, and especially when teams caught up to them in terms of their subbing, being able to speed up the offense. Again, I think with a Todd Monken offense, you're able to speed up the clock. You're able to go no huddle in different sets, various ways, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on that defense. I am like you, though. I don't believe it's going to be a high-scoring game. I believe it's going to be somewhere around that 28-24, 31-28, and quite honestly, I think it comes down to field position, and I think it may come down to special teams. And if it
Camarda.
Does, yeah, right. I was just going to say that. If it
Sorry,
comes down
I
to special
you
teams,
off.
You've got to be able to control the field, and we have probably the best punter in the nation in Camarda, where it's going to flip the other side of the field, and you're going to make them, you know, actually, you're going to force DJ to play the game that you want him to play, quite honestly, which is dink and dunk if he can. And probably pick them off a couple times. I mean, that's my prediction.
No, I'm with you. And you know, I know we're in a new age of football now where you know, passing is king and all of that. But there's been a lot of Georgia-Clemson games over the years that have been decided by field position and special teams. And who makes the smart moves and who wins the turnover battle, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of it will come down to who can convert in the red zone. Scoring touchdowns instead of field goals will be big in this game. The other interesting storyline that I think we should at least acknowledge with this being the first game of the year is there's been a lot of reports over the last few years about Clemson's rise and, you know, some alleged sign stealing, and that's one thing that Venables, their defensive coordinator, has been very known for over the years is being able to steal offensive signs. And if you watch that Ohio State game, they did a lot of, like, sugar huddles, quick stuff, not signaling in stuff from the sidelines, not checking things with the line of scrimmage.
There you go.
And oftentimes Clemson wasn't lined up when the ball was snapped because they were waiting to steal a sign and play call based on it. And, I mean, you know, and that's the truth, right? So it's like I think probably the biggest question to ask, I'm sure Todd Monken and Kirby Smart and Buster Faulkner and all those talented coaches and analysts are well aware of Clemson's reputation for it. If Sports Illustrated's written feature pieces on it, then I'm sure they know what's going on. But I think that's probably as big a storyline as any, and you won't hear many people talk about it, but can Georgia disguise their signals well enough? In game one, I think it's an advantage because there's not going to be any tape out there.
I agree. You know what? I think there's also an advantage because following Clemson, you don't have that next big opponent. You can really focus a lot of your energy on that first game. You can have everybody dialed in for that first game, and then you kind of scale back your scheme, your system, whatever you want to do. But it's going to be all hands on deck for this first game. And I think if you're not prepared for it, then I don't know what else to tell you. I really don't. I think we have the advantage, but I really don't know what to tell you if you're not prepared for this game. I'm talking fans, coaches, players, recruits, everybody should be locked into this first game. Trey, you got anything else on this subject?
Man, we winning, man. September 4th, that's a W.
Well, who do you think, I guess, you know, in that game, like what's the matchup that you're interested in, or who's the player that you think fans should have an eye on or be aware of coming into it?
Oh, the matchup I'm already locked in on is DK and Ross. I'm watching that the whole time.
That's true. I mean, yeah, how poetic and beautiful would it be if, like, we get to see Kendrick pick off a pass, like, you know.
Pick six? Oh, my.
Or a pick, and he runs out of bounds on the Clemson sideline and just, you know, puts the ball right in Dabo's lap.
See, man, you guys want to troll Clemson already. I mean, that's – come on. Well, we got to get DK to talk about that.
Let's be real here, all right? Clemson's just Auburn with a lake, okay? So there's not much about it that I have a ton of love for or anything like that.
Right.
And they also, you know, like they've done a lot of good over the last 5 years, and they've got some good history. And, you know, back in the 80s, Georgia Clemson was a war game that would determine national titles. And it's still a great series and all that. But, like, if you go back historically and look at the records, Georgia's won, you know, 70-75% of the games in the series, and hopefully they can do it again. But no, we just kid around on the show. There's plenty. I know plenty of good people with degrees from Clemson. They can put them on their dashboard, and it'll.
Right, it's all love, man.
Yeah, totally.
We love all the SEC fans, but hey.
But we still gonna beat y'all September 4th, though.
Yes, sir.
For sure.
So let's move on in the season, fellas. We got UAB, the second game. We can, I guess we could all consider that a win. South Carolina, let's go Vanderbilt. But let's skip up. I want to skip up to Arkansas followed by Auburn. And there's a reason why I wanted to do that. We started off with Arkansas last year as an SEC opponent, and that was a little bit sketchy for us up there in Arkansas. You got Pittman, head coach. He knows the system. He knows the school. He knows some of our players. It could be what some fans like to call a hiccup game, you know, one of those games that we lose. You know, I call them pessimistic fans, quite honestly, because I'm not even thinking that way. I don't think that way. But what are your thoughts with that game, then followed up by an Auburn game with a new coach, new system, new scheme, new thought process? What are your thoughts right there, which I would call the second quarter of the season?
I feel like where's the Auburn game at? Is it in Auburn?
Auburn game's in Auburn, yeah.
See that right there, I feel like that's a trap game because whenever you go to play Auburn, the crowd going to be rocking. Like, I feel, and then it's a rivalry game, especially that, so you know they're going to come out playing hard and stuff like that.
No, 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if there's anybody that can turn Bo Nix into, you know, a little bit more of a natural pocket passer and somebody that looks more comfortable playing the game, Brian Harsin might be that guy. You know, I don't know yet if he's going to be able to recruit on an SEC level. I think he's got a learning curve there, but what he did with his talent at Boise State was always impressive and commendable, and there's plenty of talent on that roster. And so I think that by that point in the year, they'll probably be rolling, and it could be instead of Bo Nix, you might have the big guy from Louisiana that transferred in. I forget his name.
PJ Finley.
Yeah, Finley. Mm-hmm. But let's not sleep on Arkansas, man. I mean, like, if they weren't playing an all-SEC schedule last year, that's probably an 8-5, 8-4 team, right?
They're a good team. They have a good team and a great defense. I'm going to say that. They defense is good.
And they play hard, you know, and they're going to play whistle-to-whistle for Pittman. I think that Georgia will eventually just kind of out-talent them, but that's a game that could very well be like 17-10 at halftime and people are sweating and wringing their hands a little bit. I just don't think that Arkansas quite has the firepower yet on offense to keep up with Georgia, what Georgia is going to roll out on offense, but they're coming. And I mean, it's exciting. I'm happy for those fans. That's one of the most loyal fan bases anywhere in the country. and they went through a rough period there with Morris and Bielema and the Bobby Petrino scandal and all that. So it's nice to see. Like, Sam Pittman, I think it was the best culture fit hire we've seen in the SEC in a long time, maybe since Kirby, you know.
Yeah.
A guy that was going to come there, he was going to make that place, you know, his Mount Everest, his ultimate destination, and it's paid off for him.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys where, you know what, he's going to be the CEO, and that's what he's done. He's putting the right coaches in the right places to make the right decisions. He's not one of those guys that has to have his imprint on every single aspect of what's happening. Obviously, he's probably, one of the best offensive line coaches out there. He's going to be able to recruit there. They're going to be big and stout in the middle. And their ability to run the football is what concerns me. Being able to make that a slow, dragged-out game, then followed up by Auburn. Because one of the things that is different –
I'm going to hate when we play against Kentucky.
What's that?
I'm going to hate when we play against Kentucky because you said that slow, drag-out game, Kentucky is going – man.
Well, see, that's what worries me with this back-to-back with Arkansas and Auburn, because a lot of people think that Boise State is just used to throwing the football around, the gadget plays. That's not necessarily true. What you saw from Bo Nix, even in the spring game, he was under center. He was under center a lot, handing the ball off a lot. You know they got Tank Briggsby up there. He's going to be toting the rock a lot. I don't want it to be a back-to-back games of us just getting beat up and physically mashed up. You know, then again, like you just said, Trey, having to play Kentucky right after that. That's three strong games that you're going to have to play against a strong running team. So, I think we come out on top, obviously. But it's not something to just kind of, turn your nose at either.
Right. And, I mean, I think the big question for Georgia is how healthy will they stay? And those are the types of games that, SEC battles in the trenches, war of attrition. And it's how you get guys like Jordan Davis banged up last year or, like losing some of these linebackers or someone in the secondary could be a huge problem down the road. So I think that's the big thing is, can Georgia maybe get out early on some of those guys, get in a comfortable place, run the ball a little bit, let some backups get more reps on defense and offense and get out of there healthy and with some energy left.
Well, you know what? Hopefully, I mean, with our depth, I mean, heck, we've recruited better than almost anybody in the country. With our depth, we should be able to platoon a lot of guys in a lot of these games. You know, that's one thing. It's an advantage and yet a disadvantage at the same time for Georgia because it looks like guys aren't really productive, but yet at the very same time, you got a lot of guys coming in that are getting stats as well. So it doesn't make guys look like they're that 10-sack guy, that 12-sack guy. Meanwhile, they might be that 8-sack guy, and then the guy behind him has 4 sacks, and the guy behind him has 2. So, getting these guys on the field, platooning, keeping them fresh, that's going to be a benefit for us, no doubt about it. So that's second quarter. Now we skip to, we go through Kentucky, and let's get to the game that probably – I don't know. I think it's second on the hit list, quite honestly, for me, and that's Florida. What are your thoughts, going down to Jacksonville, playing for Florida? Is that a redemption game for us?
Tell me about it, X-Man.
Only thing should be on the board, mind you, beating their head, straight up.
Well,
we don't got no midget at quarterback this time.
That's very true. I mean, let's talk about Florida a little bit, though. So –
yeah, let's talk about it.
Before we talk about how we expect that game to go out, I mean, by that point in the year, you're at Halloween. Florida's rolling into town.
Mm-hmm.
Emory Jones will be, he won't be a first-year starter anymore.
Right.
He'll have some games under his belt. I think the two big questions for Florida are, one, can they turn things around on defense, which, at some level they have to improve because – they were so bad last year. There's just nowhere to go.
83rd in the nation. 83rd in the nation last year. And that's the guys that went to the league.
Yeah. No. I mean, there's an issue on that defense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you would assume at that point in the season that they probably have a loss on their resume to Alabama in week 3. And then, they go Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky in back-to-back weeks. And – The thing about Alabama over the years in the SEC is sometimes they can beat you twice. And, you know, sometimes you're beat up from facing them, or there's the emotional letdown after not being able to upset them, and you're not mentally right. And, like, one area where I don't trust Dan Mullen is always having his team in the right place from a focus standpoint. We saw that against LSU last year, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a decent chance that, you know, they also have LSU – 2 weeks before Georgia, like, there's a decent chance they come down to Jacksonville with two losses, and that game might not necessarily be for the SEC East like it has been in a lot of years. But with Emory Jones as quarterback, I think you got to feel better as a Georgia fan. And it's not me knocking Emory Jones's talent. It's just that, like, the offense that Florida ran last year with Kyle Trask, where they spread it out five wide and, you know, we're motioning backs out of the backfield on deep routes downfield, that's not what Dan Mullen has historically run. He's historically, you know, had those running.
No more Will Rose, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, where Kirby has struggled over the years is like, defending those true spread passing attacks. And where he's excelled, I mean, like, you got to remember, he was the guy that solved the Tebow Urban Meyer offense.
Right.
Like, he's the guy that came up with the formula to stop them. And that's the Dan Mullen playbook right there. And it's like, if you go back before last season, Kirby Smart had faced Dan Mullen offenses 13 times. And last year was the first time since 2008 where he gave up 20 or more than 20 points. And so, like, I think that if it's that dual threat offense that Florida has, you have to feel good about Georgia being able to play assignment football and hold Florida somewhere into the teens or 20s in that game. And then you would have to think, with, you know, Third and Grantham still running the D over there at Florida, that Georgia's probably going to be able to put up 30 or more and get out of there with a win. I also think that that team could be in a really – kind of, you know, rough place mentally if things start to snowball and go downhill after Alabama, where, you know, like, it's not going to shock me, and I've said this many times on Twitter, and I'll say it here, and I know we have a lot of Florida people that listen to this podcast and that will probably, you know, want to call me out or send me emails or whatever, but I'm not going to be surprised at all if Dan Mullen is on the hot seat after this season, just because the way things ended last year, taking, you know, the best offense that they have ever had in school history and turning that into an 8-4 record, and kind of some of the program management issues, it's going to be really interesting to see. And I think we'll learn a lot about, you know, Florida and Dan Mullen this year. And if they have another 10-2 type of season, then he's here to stay for a while. But I think it's very, you know, it's just as possible that they have another 8-4 kind of year. And I just don't know where you kind of see them, where is up from there for them under Mullen. I think they might be talking regime change in 6 months.
I'm definitely going to get my popcorn ready for you on Twitter. They go. Your mention's going to be hell. I'm definitely going to have my popcorn ready.
What do you think? Like, what do you guys think about that?
You know, well, let's give them some kudos. I mean, first of all, look, Florida does get talent. You know, they are a good program. I mean, as much as we don't like them, you got to admit they've had their time of winning. We talked about 06. We talked about 08.
Shout out to Kyle Pitts and Tony. They did their thing on the offense.
That's right. I mean, yeah. But that's going to be tough to kind of bring that back into the talent room, so to speak, when you lose a Kyle Pitts, when you lose a Tony, when you lose Trask that, you know, played outstanding last year, given that they haven't had a quarterback play that outstanding in a long time. And then on defense, you lose Wilson on defense. You lose Davis on the back end. That's a lot of talent to kind of, replenish, to feel that you can actually go back-to-back and win SEC East titles against a Georgia team that has basically everybody coming back, right, along with the quarterback now under center.
Except for the secondary, yeah.
Yeah, except for the secondary. But at the same time, you have a front seven that's going to be absolutely ferocious, and which helps you on that back end. But the thing that concerns me with Florida more is kind of like what you said, Graham. I mean, they're not as talented – as they think they are this year, and they could actually end up going, in my opinion, maybe like 7-5. I really believe that. I believe there's a lot of games that they can lose. I mean, I think there's, if they're not dialed in, especially with a new quarterback and an Emory Jones, it's going to be a new system. It's not the same system as it was last year. It's going to be more dual threat. Can they beat an Alabama? No. Heck, they can get upset by Tennessee, if you ask me, the second week, if they're not dialed in. Right?
I agree.
The system that Tennessee's playing.
Yeah.
So,
Tennessee's going to put up points, man.
They're going to put up points. That's a hypo offense that can put up points. You know what? And they're going to be dialed in for some of those games because that's their bowl game. They're not going to a bowl game, fellas. So Tennessee's going to give you their best shot for every time that they play.
And don't sleep on Missouri either, man. I mean,
no, Missouri is especially my super team because that coach is getting them right over there.
He's recruited well, and I mean,
He has a good quarterback.
And he's young, and he's going to have them for another, two years.
And their defense not that bad.
No, they're not. And, I mean, I think,
Yeah, their defense plays tough, man.
And Florida has to go play at Missouri this year. Yeah. And,
I feel like that's going to be a good game right there.
It will.
Then they get Florida State, at home to end the season, which, again, it can go either way. Florida State's actually on the uptick.
I just feel like how Florida's season is going to go is after how they play Bama. If they play Bama hard and close, they're going to have a good season. If they just come out flat against Bama, it's going to be a long season for them.
Well, I think that you could also see them play the best game they play of the year against Alabama and still lose by, 10 to 17 points. And it's that mental bounce back that we, we're just talking about. It's like,
that's right.
I don't trust Dan Mullen in certain situations to get his team back focused and ready after a game like that. And I could be proven wrong. And like we were saying, there's a lot of good stuff that happened last year. And you guys brought up Tony and Pitts, and that was the best offense in University of Florida history.
Yes, it was.
But they still went 8-4.
Hey, but before we get off of Florida, I just got a quick question because I threw this out on Twitter under our account. And it was for the Clemson game, if it should be a home and away series, if it should be home, away, the neutral field. What do you guys think about the Florida game? Should it be a home and away series? Should we go back to that, or should it be a neutral site in Jacksonville for the cocktail party?
Home and away.
No, I mean, I like the neutral site in Jacksonville, and, I'm probably a little more old school around this than a lot of people my age. I grew up going down there for – going down to South Georgia to St. Simon's and stuff and having the, when I was in school, they gave us Thursday and Friday off. And, that was the best party of the year was going down to the Georgia-Florida game, right? But I think that, I wouldn't mind seeing it rotate on campus a couple years and then back to Jacksonville for a couple years. The problem is, I don't really want to – I don't want to see that game played in Atlanta. Because I've heard people be we should do Jacksonville and Atlanta and then Athens and Gainesville. So, I don't know, man. I mean, I wouldn't hate them doing it to try it out and play it on campus. But I think that's kind of what makes the rivalry so special, man, is just everyone coming down there and 50-50 stadium. There's very few scenes like it in college football. And the tough thing, though, is just, there's so much money around a home game. I just don't know how many more years both schools are going to be willing to give up the money that they're losing on a potential home game to play it there.
Well, would you be okay with home, away, and neutral in Jacksonville? That way, if you're a recruit and you get 3 years, 3 to 4 years at your respective school, you get to play at each site.
Yeah.
I think that's a selling point for a kid to say, hey, you know what, you get to play them at home, you get to play them away. Then you get the neutral site. You get a little bit of everything.
Right.
What are your thoughts? Is that cool?
I like them thoughts right there.
No, I mean, I think it'd be cool. And, I mean, that game was Mark Richt's bugaboo, right? And
yeah.
I know that Florida won last year, but Kirby's kind of changed the mentality in that rivalry. It's a 90-minute bus ride for Florida, and it's a play-in ride for Georgia to go down there. So it's probably an advantage to Georgia if it switches up some.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, man. Well, let's get into fourth quarter, I guess the fourth quarter of the season. And let's, basically call it our way too early SEC championship prediction, because I believe that all three of us say, we're going to win SEC East. Who do you think wins the SEC West? Is it Alabama's to lose to anybody? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I personally think so.
I personally think it's going to be Bama again.
I think that anyone that picks against Alabama until given reason to is foolish at this point, right?
Yeah, so, I think Bama might have lost people, but they just reload. It's nothing.
Totally. But I will say this. I think the A&M hype is maybe not justified just because they did lose their quarterback, and that's, you know, that's still a question mark. But I think LSU has as much talent as anybody, and
right.
I have no idea what's gonna go on down there this year after the off season they've had and all that. But like if that team is in the right place mentally, they can go out and beat anybody. And the last thing I'll say about the West that I think is really fascinating is that if Ole Miss even has an average defense,
look out!
Oh,
yeah,
look
they
out.
Could be a 9-3 or 10-2 team. Straight up. And
Lane Kiffin ever to get a defense.
Well, see, yeah. Well, then what you're looking at then, if you have LSU step back up, if you have Ole Miss, you know, kind of throw a monkey wrench in everybody's program, if you have Texas A&M actually develop a quarterback after losing Kellen Mond last year, maybe you have an Alabama, a one-loss Alabama team. Maybe you have a two-loss Alabama team. Who knows? Because when you look at Alabama, I mean, they lost a ton of talent, fellas. You can't lose that much talent and just throw whatever you want back into the mix, and it's going to be the same process. They lose Sarkisian. He goes over to Texas, and now you got a new offensive coordinator in Bill O'Brien that, hey, I'm in Houston, Texas right now. I know the type of personality this guy has had. I'm trying to figure out how well he is really going to mesh in that locker room with those kids. You're talking about Deshaun Watson here in Houston that he kind of, you know, put a monkey wrench in his program.
And Hopkins, yes.
Right, that's a kid. I mean, those are guys that everybody loves, and these kids have grown up loving, and all of a sudden, you're the guy that did that. I mean, I'm interested to see how this experiment's going to work in Tuscaloosa, quite honestly.
But we've been seeing Bama lose a lot of players and coaches. They do that every year when they go on a championship run, but they just reload right back, and they beat right back in a national championship. It's like, it's just normal for them to lose coaches. It's really, it's normal. Like, you would think, like, oh, yeah, they lost their coaches, like they lost the offensive coordinator, running back coach. They just gonna take somebody else's coach, basically. Just like they brought the North Carolina running back coach over here. And he already got two commitments already at running back. Top 10 running backs too. It's just like, man, somebody just gotta dethrone Nick Saban. Or Nick Saban just needs to retire. Matter of fact, Nick Saban, why you just don't retire, man?
Give everybody else a shot.
Man, I'm with you. Right. And give somebody else a shot, bro. You got more than 5 rings already. Dang.
Yeah.
Sick of that man now, bro. When he retires, I'm having a block party. Everybody invite him, bro. Straight up.
Yeah, no, that'll be a good day. I do think, though, that I agree with you, Lamar. Like, I think it's possible Bama goes 12-0. Up until the SEC title game, and they roll in there undefeated. It's also possible that they roll in there with a loss or two. I don't know. But I guess let's, you know. So, like, are we all saying that Bama wins the West? Is that the consensus?
I'm saying that Bama wins the West. I just don't know how easy it's going to come.
The West is going to be a gauntlet.
Yeah, it's going to be a gauntlet. It's going to be probably one of the most exciting races you're going to see all year, because every week there's going to be a game that you're going to want to tune in for outside of watching the Dogs. I mean, think
I'm
about
definitely
it.
Going to watch when they play against Ole Miss, for sure.
I mean, if you look at Bama's schedule, they got Miami game one. I mean, that there could be a test. And there, I think that is
Bama
that
by
Miami?
50.
I don't think
Bama
it's that. I think
50.
It's a neutral field. But then
It's in Atlanta.
That's right. Then they got Florida. You know, they play Ole Miss. They got A&M. They got LSU, like, as we already talked about. I mean, I think they stump a mud hole in Auburn and Tennessee, so I don't think we have to worry about them. But I mean, still, it could be a tougher schedule than what some people think. And again, I kind of go back to that Bill O'Brien thing. I've had people tell me that, you know what, there's no problem. He's going to be able to coach those kids, and Saban's going to be able to control the locker room. But if you look at those offensive coordinators, those were more or less players' coaches. Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, those are guys that kids love. Bill O'Brien is not the cuddly guy. I mean, last images you see are him arguing with Deshaun Watson or arguing with Tom Brady, who's probably the greatest quarterback in the history of the game of football. you know, how's that going to work out with his quarterback room? I just don't know, fellas.
I know it's going to be. I mean, you know, where
it's going to be interesting, sure.
Yeah, and especially with the recruiting down the road, like, because I think that will have some effect in some way on the Arch Manning recruitment.
Yes.
Yes. You know, and I mean, yeah, he does have NFL experience to sell too. So there is the flip side of that coin, but.
Right.
It's a tough one, man. Yeah, I'm with you there. So let's say Georgia and Alabama are playing in the SEC title.
Yeah.
What happens?
We got to beat them in the rough.
That's the truth.
That is true.
I think it's really a season where, for as much talent as Alabama has in the room, one, we are just as talented. It's truly going to come down to have our guys matured on that back end in the secondary, because I think we can control the offensive line. I think we can control the defensive line. It's going to be that back end in that secondary. I don't even think it's going to come down to special teams. If that secondary is solidified by mid-season, by three-quarters of the season, playing top-caliber ball, and those freshmen are now getting in, guys like Ringo and Kimber and Speed are playing up to par, you know what? It's going to be hell on wheels for Alabama, because they don't have the same offensive talent as they had last year. It's going to be a new quarterback, new system.
Thank God, Devontae Smith.
Yeah, Devontae Smith is gone. You know,
Najee Harris. Thank you.
Michi's there, but I mean, again, they don't have the same talent, fellas. And I just think that if it comes down to that game, Georgia handles that game, and I think they don't even handle it like in a close game. I think we actually win by like maybe 17. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
I don't know how I'm going to say that. You know.
I'll go back to 17. Yeah. You know what? I'll go back to 17. That game, and I know Florida fans are going to get on me. Oh, here they go talking about 17 again. They were handling that game. If you look at it last year, they were handling Alabama last year. Then all of a sudden you get into the
same in 18.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I don't think that when we get into that particular position that Kirby will take his foot off the gas. I'm sorry. I just think fellas, take it to him. And it's not going to be with ignorance. It's not
like,
be
you
with
have
knowledge,
to, like,
but
you can't take your foot off the gas. You have to put the dagger in.
Yes,
like,
you do.
You literally have to put the dagger
in. That's right. It'll be a statement game. I think it'll be a statement game for the university for a long time.
Just like when LSU did when they went down to Bama. They literally went down there and beat them. Like, you don't see that often.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I agree. And, I mean, I think that the question is, if you beat Alabama in the SEC title game, do you have to play them
again,
you know? And I mean, you hope not. And if they show up to that game with one loss, then you probably knock them out of the race.
Right.
If they pull up undefeated, you definitely playing them again.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, just, you know, as a neutral observer.
Let's be real. Who want to play Bama twice in 1 year?
Well, if you're going to play them twice, then you want to lose the first one. You want to run in there. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not ever going to pull for Georgia to lose any game, but
I don't want to play them Bama twice. I'm straight.
I don't either. I'll put it this way, though. I think the two teams that scare me for Georgia that I think, you know, that I worry about Georgia being able to beat are Ohio State and Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if Oklahoma's defense is what we think it's going to be.
So we already know the quarterback going to be great.
Yeah, so that could be scary. And then Ohio State, if they get – even mediocre quarterback play with that receiver room they have, it's going to be hell on wheels, right? So, I mean, I think that's the question. Because as a lifelong Georgia fan, it would be so Georgia to win against Bama in the SEC title game, get over that hump, but not
cut up
that national title.
I'm going to beat Bama in the SEC championship game. I'm going to cut up then. I'm going fine. Matter of fact, hold on. Tia, you watch the broadcast. We beat y'all this year in the SEC championship game. You're going to have to see me on Twitter.
There you go. So, I mean, like, what do you guys – I mean, let's just – we might as well go all the way with this. Like, what's the season prediction for Georgia?
Wow. Well, you know what? My season prediction would be, I mean, I got Georgia. I got Oklahoma most definitely in the college football playoff. And
yeah,
that's my prediction of the championship game, quite honestly.
I got
Oklahoma and Georgia. And but when it comes down to it, I trust Georgia's defense and Georgia overall talent, their talented room, more than Oklahoma. As much as people like Spencer Rattler, he's not my favorite quarterback. I mean, he struggled a lot last year, and I think it's his arrogance, quite honestly, that actually is his detriment. They had to ring him in last year. If you watched, I mean, I had to, being down here in Houston, you have to watch a lot of Oklahoma games. I mean, they're on TV all the time as well. He's talented. They have a talented room, and they got probably the quarterback whisperer as the head coach. I mean, let's just be honest. He sends everybody he wants and anybody he wants to the NFL. But right. I believe at the same time, if you can rattle Spencer, it causes a lot of problems for him. He gets outside
what
of
game
his game.
He was rattled because it was one of them games he was rattled. Wasn't the Kansas,
Iowa
Kansas
State.
State?
Iowa State.
And Kansas
it?
State.
Yeah.
And Kansas. Yeah.
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 That's what I'm saying. You have to worry about Oklahoma getting upset.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see that. I see Oklahoma running the table in that.
Yeah, because, like, we all know Ohio State probably going to be in Michigan. They always lose to Ohio State. So.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. No, I think I'm with you. My CFP would probably be Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and then one for you guys that will surprise you a little bit. But I think Washington is going to do a bunch of damage out in the Pac-12. They have a lot of talent coming back. They're kind of under the radar. I think they could, you know, go 11-1 out there, win the Pac-12 title game, and slip in as like a 4 seed or something in the playoff. But, you know, the other question, too, is Clemson – will they get away with losing to Georgia? And
there you go.
Yeah, because, I mean, they very well could lose to Georgia and then win the rest of their games. Their strength of schedule is ranked, I think, 79th in the country.
Yeah,
trash.
It's trash. Yeah, there's a group of five teams with a tougher strength of schedule than them.
Only close game they might have against North Carolina.
And they won't play. They don't play North Carolina until a potential ACC championship match.
They don't play Notre Dame, though? Well, I can't say it.
Not this year. I mean, they play like nobody, man. I mean, like maybe the best team they play is in the regular season is FSU.
Right.
I'm trying. Yeah. I mean, who else do they play?
They have Pittsburgh and FSU. That's it.
Yeah. No offense, man, but Pittsburgh is
right.
You know, they're not great.
Cakewalk.
Did you say
offense
because I'm from Pittsburgh originally?
I did. Yeah.
My dad's an alum. He listens to the cast.
No offense, Mr. Loveless. But, yeah, my thing with Clemson is, like, if they lose to Georgia, unless UNC, like, runs the table or something and they see them in the ACC title and they handle them, I don't think they deserve to be in the playoff. I really don't. Like, I don't think that the resume is indicative. They haven't played another, you know, they probably won't have played
that. You say that. You say that right there. Say if we so-called do beat Bama in the SEC championship game. Bama is going to take that spot because basically it's probably going to be Ohio State and Oklahoma. Or say if we even lose the Bama SEC championship game, we should get that spot.
Oh, no. I mean, if we're undefeated and we lose to Bama in the SEC title game, we have one loss and it's to
– right, and it's to Bama. So come on, like.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on a lot of external factors, but you would think that Georgia, in most years in the past, they should be a shoe-in for a playoff spot.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what happened in 2017, in a sense. I mean, we got
– Yeah, we had two losses. Then we had two losses?
In 17,
what was that year we had two losses? And Nick Saban said, we should be in there again.
Was it 18?
Might have been. I think it might have been 18 because then Oklahoma got blew out by Alabama that year.
Yeah, yeah. That was when they had 18. I think that's when they had Kyler.
Yeah, they had Kyler. Yep. Oh yeah. That's when CeeDee Lamb blindsided the shit out of Matt Wilson. Yeah, that was that year.
But, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you a dark horse, Graham, because you talked about Washington. This could throw a monkey wrench in everybody's program as well, is that you got Oregon playing Ohio State. And Ohio State's replacing the quarterback. I like Oregon. Oregon's got a monster defense. They got Thibodeau out there. Their offense is going to be much, much better. I mean, they were starting to gel last year. But, I mean, again, it was a COVID-based season. if Oregon can actually go out east and beat Ohio State, that's going to throw a monkey wrench in everybody's program as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's going to be like, okay, who's the, you know, the toss-up? Does Clemson get in? Does an Ohio State get in? Does an Oregon? Because, again, the Pac-12 has never had anybody play in the college football playoffs.
That's not true.
Why isn't it?
They had Washington play in it. In,
that was a while back. Remember?
Yeah, it was. They played Bama.
In the college football playoffs?
In the first year of the CFP, yeah.
Man, I got to check on that.
Oregon also went to a national title game and played Ohio State in the college football playoffs.
Was that?
Yeah, it was 2014.
Was that during the playoffs?
That was the first year of the playoff, and then Washington went in 16.
I'm wrong on it. I'm wrong on it, folks.
No, you're good. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like a Pac-12 team, I don't know. They probably have to run the table to get in. I mean, Utah would have gone a couple years ago if they didn't lose the championship game against Oregon or wherever they played.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, and the thing about Cristobal out at Oregon is he has built that program like a – you know, a lot like an SEC program where you beefed up the lines. And so they got a shot to go in there and play Ohio State. I mean, it's college football, right? Like nothing that we expect to happen ever happens. You know, there's going to be some game, even if Georgia beats Clemson, there's going to be some game probably where, you know, things just aren't working well or it's a rainy day or something and it's going to be a nail biter and they're going to have to try and pull it out in the fourth quarter against some 500 team or whatever. I mean, that's just how the sport goes, right? So it's going to be exciting.
That's right. Well, Trey, what's your prediction? Me and Graham went Georgia, Oklahoma. You got to give yours, man, before we end this show today.
Got Oklahoma, Ohio State, Bama, and Georgia.
Who's in the finals?
Oh.
Bama-Georgia rematch?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because somebody is going to be 1-4.
That means Bama or Georgia is going to have to beat Oklahoma.
Yep.
That'd be a good one.
That would be a good one. Yeah, and the other one's going to have to beat Ohio State, which would also be a hell of a game.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
I don't know, man. All I know is I'm excited. We're not that far away. We're only a couple months out.
That's right, man. We got the ticker going on the 100 Sanford Podcast website. That's on the bottom of there. It's, you know, right at getting us to the first moment of kickoff. But I'm excited. I'm like you guys. I can't wait. I'm all charged up every day checking out something on college football. So before we go, anybody have anything else?
Go Dogs, man.
Go Dogs.
100%. Go Dogs. All right. All right, well, tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, you know what? You can reach us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's at 100 Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, and our Facebook page, it's at 100 Sanford Podcast. And you know what, folks? That's it. You know what? And as usual, we'll see you at 100 Sanford. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.